I feel like whenever there's only asynchronous teaching, it loses the social aspect of learning that makes university, for me personally, what university is about. I feel like it's missing this shared construction of knowledge. That's something that's, for me, a really, really important part. So I am missing this in a lot of the teaching that is going on right now in university.
Welcome to the Unconditional Teaching Podcast. Unconditional Teaching is a project by Katharina Pietsch, Tilsi Bura, and myself, Jessica Koch. In this two-part episode, Katharina Till and I talk to Sophie Giegel and Benjamin Stur, two students at Bielefeld University, about how they experienced a socially distanced learning environment and online teaching during the global pandemic. Sophie currently studies British and American Studies and Social Sciences in the Master of Education and recently finished her mandatory internship as a teacher in training. She is also currently employed as a student assistant for the Dean's Office at the Faculty of Sociology. Benjamin is in his Bachelor of Arts and studies British and American Studies, Philosophy and Literary Studies. He is also an active member of the Anglistik Fachschaft as well as the Equal Opportunities Committee in the Faculty of Linguistics and Literary Studies. Benny and Sophie, thank you so much for joining us today for this podcast and sharing your experiences with online teaching with us. As a sort of introductory question, I would like you to maybe to describe to us and the audiences to describe a typical day that you're experiencing right now in the pandemic, with a specific focus on what it is like for you to attend seminars online and to participate in this socially distanced, long distance learning atmosphere.
Well, I try to get up every day at around the same time, which is kind of going well, actually. Well, while it's hard, though, because seminar times are starting at very different times, right? So some days I have to be in a video session at 10 and the other day only at 2 p.m., right? So I then attend 2 to 3 sessions that mostly are actually video conferences, which is very, very draining for me. And afterwards, I try to, well, catch up on some reading for the seminars and or do, well, the usual session work, preparation, reading the texts for it, trying to do assignments for the Studienleistung and stuff like that. Usually I've tried, at least during the summer term, to have a break outside, either on my balcony, which I am very fortunate to have, or by taking a walk about 20 minutes in the very small foresty parky thing near my flat, actually. So that is how I try to kind of structure my day. And in the evening, it's mostly the usual stuff, like sometimes cleaning, making dinner, trying to kind of not hang around the TV so much. I usually try to read in the evening, and at least like 1 or 2 hours before going to bed, I try not to be on any screen. But well, free time resolves a lot about video games or the TV, so it's kind of very screeny.
Yeah, so for me, I recently started to try to get up a little more consistently. Like the last 2 weeks, I've been getting up at 6 a.m. because I'm not the most morning person there is, and people piss me off whenever they talk to me in the morning. So it's better to get up before anyone else gets up so nobody can talk to me, which has been going quite well, actually. Yeah, then I start whatever I'm doing that day. So the moment I'm doing a lot of Studienleistung stuff that I've not done this the rest of the semester because I now have to do it, as every semester. My evenings, I try to spend time with my flatmates. We have been playing a lot of pen and paper lately, which is nice, just to get out of your own skin for once. Otherwise, I'm not really active. I'm listening to a lot of music, playing some video games a little less lately, watching a lot of movies. Like, basically everything to get your mind off the pandemic that's going on outside and everything that sucks.
How many classes are you each taking?
Well, last term I didn't take any properly because I was in my practical term, but I've got like 2 to 3 lessons with the students at school. And the semester before that, the summer term, I think I've had about 8. So it's been quite a lot. Yeah, it was the second term of my master's and I had a lot of preparatory stuff to do before the practical term. And it was, a lot to do.
And the lessons you teach at school, that's probably several times a week per lesson, and you have to prep them and also revise them afterwards and so on?
It depends. So because I don't have like courses I teach, it's more like some kind of, it's called Ausbildungsunterricht, right? Where I have some courses I follow, and it's basically switching between observing and actually teaching. So I haven't taught a lot digitally, but actually one whole unit on working time models, basically. So that has been something I actually taught, but it's a lot around talking to my mentors at school, actually, about how to teach digitally. So a lot of phone calls where we say, well, how do we do that? And I feel like a bit of a technical support member of the class, actually. I've been doing a lot of the technical support when it comes to students that had troubles with the hardware or the software, and kind of coordinating group work there.
I think I have more questions about that later, because this whole range of issues that are clustered around that. But I would like to ask Benny too, how many classes are you taking and how involved is that?
Sure. I mean, last semester I basically did one block seminar and not much else, because I sort of dropped out of most things that I did because I wasn't in a good place at that point in time. Theoretically speaking, I'm taking 5 classes, really doing work for 2, so somewhere in between 2 and 5 classes and one block seminar that I'm taking just for fun.
Benny, when you say you weren't in a good place at the time, was that related to the pandemic, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't mind. It was partly the pandemic, because it was like suddenly from, hey, I can do whatever the hell I want, and just going out with friends, being in university and taking proper classes in university, to, well, yeah, now you're shut in and you're not allowed to leave the flat. And then I had problems with my flatmate, who is not my perfect flatmate. So I'm a very social person in that setting. I like talking to my flatmates at night, and she's more of a recluse, actually. She was basically shutting herself into a room anyway, so the pandemic didn't have that much of an impact on her. But I struggled a lot with that, so it definitely took a toll on my ability to do university things.
And has this changed now in this new semester?
A bit. It's basically like starting my studies again, because way back when I started studying, I had some very similar issues, but I was still able to go to university and talk to people. And now I'm starting to cope with the inability to actually talk to people in person. But yeah, it has improved quite a lot, actually.
I'm glad.
I can relate very well to you, like dropping some classes or, you know, being in actually five, but only doing stuff for two. I've had a kind of similar experience during the summer term because I've had, like I said, a lot of classes, but all the classes where there was work that I could reduce, like some asynchronous teaching, it was basically a lecture, I've actually dropped that because I didn't feel able to confront myself with yet another video to watch or to listen, the podcast to listen to on the screen sitting at my desk, because it was still, again, just sitting here and not being able to talk to people properly. And it takes so much out of you to actually be on your desk the whole time and kind of talking to people, but actually not really, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you see us here furiously nodding to what you two describe. I've had conversations with a lot of students, either in class or during my office hour, that reported very, very similar things. And oftentimes they tell me that they find particular, or that they find certain didactic methods or styles or mediums particularly draining. And I mean, Sophie, you started off by saying that you find video calls or like a large number of video calls per day to be draining, I think was the word that you used.
Yeah.
Maybe a question to both of you. Are there things, methods, mediums that you find particularly draining or problematic or less helpful than others in this didactic online environment?
So for me, that's definitely asynchronous teaching. It's, to me, that's like hell. It's I have to do things on my own time, and if I don't have deadlines, except the one deadline at the end of the semester, I'm doing everything basically 2 days before that deadline. And to me, that's sort of, that sort of feels a little toxic, actually. It destroys your own mindset because you're not doing the things you are supposed to do. And then again, it feels like more work. I have classes where I feel that the students are doing way more work than the lecturer. So like it feels like the lecturer is not doing any work because we can't see that. Because in a class where the lecturer is talking to the students, even just asking questions about the experience in the work, there you feel that the lecturer is actually engaging with the stuff that they are teaching. And it's not like here you have 1,000 texts that you are supposed to read and summarize or whatever. And that's it. And that's, I hate asynchronous teaching. It's like the worst thing there is, in my opinion.
So, and synchronous teaching, on the other hand, also gives you we were talking about deadlines, right? Gives you at least a time period in which to do some of the work, some little part of the work, and then get together with other students and the lecturer, talk about it, and then you take on the next bit of work. And then asynchronous teaching, it is all plonked down on you. Yes. As one huge block, which is difficult to handle then.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, even if I have these closed deadlines, like 1 week to the next, I still do it one day or like a couple of hours before I have to hand it in. But it's a small part that I have to hand in, not like 1,000 pages that I have to write. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can prioritize your work.
Exactly.
So to me, there were like at least two aspects or levels in what you said. The one is, it makes it much harder for you to actually structure your work, but there's also a relationship aspect missing? Because, I mean, you said it doesn't feel like the lecturer is doing any work if you're not engaged with them. Is the relationship important, or is it a matter of like fairness that you feel like they are putting in work that is meaningful to you and makes your and does feel to you as if the social contract between teachers and learners is intact, something like that?
I would phrase it a little differently and say it is a bit about respect, or like mutual respect. Like, the thing I enjoy about like classes is that, especially in linguistics, that students and lecturers respect each other. They are like, we're exchanging opinions or exchanging knowledge or whatever, and we are all getting something out of it. And that's the thing that I like. And just in some classes, it feels like that. And that's also something that other lecturers do in like real classes where it's not asynchronous but synchronous, where it feels like we are doing their research for some paper they want to write. And that's something I massively dislike, because if I have to write a paper, I'm doing my research and no one else does it for me. And I think that people who teach or who are paid for researching should also research. I mean, it's like, I'm not saying that it's bad that teachers take something away from classes that they are giving for their own research. It's just, it's about, for me, it's about respect. That's the main point. Yeah.
I was thinking about, because of the question that was like, what kind of teaching is kind of particularly bad, right? And Benny, you just said asynchronous teaching, and I can relate to that. I feel like that whenever there's only asynchronous teaching, it loses the social aspect of learning that makes university, for me personally, what university is about and university teaching, right? I feel like it's missing this shared construction of knowledge. That's something that's for me a really, really important part. And I don't feel like actually asynchronous teaching is the worst kind of teaching, because I'm also often missing this in synchronous video conferences. Because I wouldn't say they are the worst kind of or a particularly draining kind of teaching, but I do feel very drained after them, because I am someone that kind of, I don't know if thrives is the right word, but I do thrive in these social encounters in which I am able to talk about theory and about, I don't know, novels we've read together to make something out of it, or on social sciences about political structures that we are angry about or that we want to criticize, right? So I am missing this in any, or in, not in any teaching, but in a lot of the teaching that is going on right now in university. And I haven't had the experience like Benny with a missing respect, mostly because I feel like the teachers I had prioritized the dialogue whenever possible. But I felt like for them as well, it was a really, really big struggle to organize in this digital context. So I felt like whenever there were kind of phases of asynchronous teaching, so there were like 2 weeks where there was no video conference, and then there was a video conference to discuss what we've done in the meantime. There was something I really enjoyed on the other hand, like to say, to kind of turn this into where something went very positively, right? There was something where I felt this was meaningful and there's something happening with what I've done. Because that is something I'm encountering in school as well, that students say, well, we've got all the tasks each week or each day, basically. And whenever we meet, we don't do anything with them, or we don't meet at all. We don't get anything out of it. Whenever we do the tasks or exercises, they do these exercises only for doing them and not for actually learning anything or for engaging with something properly.
Yeah, I think I would directly like to pick this up because in the Unteach project, but also in all other kinds of teaching contexts, we've been discussing with colleagues and amongst ourselves this idea of how to create meaningful tasks, how to make learning or the tasks that are attached to learning experiences meaningful to the individual learner. And that is, of course, something that cannot sort of happen if we just put out tasks for the sake of putting out tasks, because there needs to be homework or something like that. And I really appreciate that you mentioned this also for the school context, because this is not something that is unique to university or unique to the digital learning experience. This is something that really requires teachers to really take a look at their own teaching practices and to constantly make sure that the tasks that they put out still resonate with the students and still sort of carry meaning. And sometimes that means renegotiation of tasks with students. Another thing that Benny pointed out that I found super interesting, because you said that asynchronous teaching and learning doesn't really work for you. I assume from what you spoke about when speaking about asynchronous teaching is mostly here, have a reading week, there are X texts, go ahead, have fun. And the problem with that is, of course, you have to read for your studies. But usually, after we've read something, we talk about it. Because we are, especially in the humanities, we are so crucially aware of the fact that, as both of you have pointed out, there's this shared construction of knowledge. And of discourse. And if that doesn't happen, then oftentimes nothing happens for us in our brains when we read a text. We just have read yet another text. I have a question for both of you with regard to the organizational aspects, because you both have put an emphasis on that. Some teachers may argue that it is in the hands of the students, of the individual students, to sort of pull themselves up on the bootstraps and learn how to organize themselves. And this is not something that the teacher can provide for you or anything. How would you react to a sentiment like that? What's your view on something like this?
I'm just trying to imagine being a first semester and being told that, just coming from school, having done your Abitur also in a digital way, basically. I would be pissed. I would be very angry about that statement, because that's just my personal experience from school. I haven't been properly prepared for university. You're getting your tasks, you do them, you get a good grade because you do them, not because your tasks are very good, and that's it. And I never feel prepared for university when I came from school. And if a lecturer would tell me that I should pull myself up on my own bootstraps, how am I supposed to learn without anybody showing me how to do the things? It's like, should I invent something completely new for myself? Should I, whatever? I would find that very disrespectful, actually.
I would totally agree with you. I think being a first semester and then being told just pull yourself together is terribly disrespectful on one hand, and just so not part of the reality of first term students. Because I remember this time being about trying out so many different kinds of learning. Is it a learning group? Is the thing for me? How do I even learn? Because learning at university or preparing for exams, or, you know, to be able to prepare for something very specific, or being able to organize my life, basically, because it's not only about university, right? It's about reorganizing my whole life right now. And then being told, just do it. Oh, yeah, I just do it. That's the obviously the solution to my problem, that you just told me to pull myself together, right? And I felt this trying out phase is something that we cannot really do right now during this crisis, because we are in crisis mode. Most of leisure time that we are able to have is going on outside, if it's going to the movies or meeting friends, anything basically is that isn't walking around outside, is being confined to our four walls, ideally. And I personally am a very organized person, and it's usually not very hard for me to structure my day and to kind of balance out doing something for university and well, having some free time, right? But during this crisis, I actually had so, it was so difficult for me to actually organize my day, because there was this crisis mode and this whole new way of organizing, because I wasn't able to get out of my flat. Usually university was at university, and at home I did some stuff at my desk, but you know, mostly my home was about leisure time and about recreational time in which I was able to gain energy. And right now this is all my workplace, and I am fortunate enough to have an office here, right? But to not have that, that would be terrible for me. And this is hard enough as it is. So yeah, so much to being organized, right? But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, believe me, it's terrible if you have to work in the same room that you're sleeping in. I have 16 square meters, and I'm fine with that, but it sucks. Oh, yes, the other thing I wanted to say that just came to me was the impact of that statement that you started, that we started with, on mental health. Like, you're coming from school, you're probably 18, 19, so completely overwhelmed with anything, probably damaged from childhood, teenage years, whatever, and then someone tells you to just pull yourself together, and it's, you don't tell, also don't tell a depressive person to just pull themselves together, because that's not how shit works, that's not how life works.
I was going to say, we don't even have to restrict the sort of rejections of a statement like pull yourself together to first semesters. I think it's also completely valid for advanced students, for students who have spent several semesters establishing their routines, working out their strategies. I mean, even Benny, you talked sort of a little disparaging about your tendency of getting things done last minute. But I would say, this is a functional strategy that you have developed over the course of your studies that got you through your studies. And as such, it served you well, and it's valuable. And you developed that yourself, right? In my seminars, and Katharina and I worked on that a lot, and I know Jessica does too, we focus specific units on just skills of process, how to do this, how to do the work, how to chunk the writing, what to do first. And we don't do this in a directive manner, but we do this in a way so that students can develop their own skills and their own strategies and the sense of how they want to work. Okay, this works fine when you're sitting together in a classroom and you talk about it and you reflect this and you see the results that students have, and we hope that over a couple of semesters, students will find their ways of working academically as professionals and feeling professional doing it too. Now, I think if this is a scenario that works quite well under normal circumstances, this is set to zero as soon as the pandemic starts and everything in the organizational sense changes. So the old strategies, which may have worked quite well, which you felt competent and professional in, have to be reacquired. And teachers have to reacquire their own strategies of teaching and structuring tasks all over again too. But now everyone talks about, well, we just have to deal with it somehow. And I could totally understand that if students felt left alone to a large degree, just as I can totally understand if teachers feel left alone to a large degree in all this, because we don't have any functional strategies anymore to structure our time to get our work done.
Yeah, I would just like to emphasize this. What you just said, I think, is quite emblematic or paradigmatic, maybe. We just have to deal with it somehow. And then everybody is more or less left to their own devices. There is some exchange going on, but it takes, of course, forever to develop these strategies. And until then, everybody's sort of, both students as well as teachers, are being left on their own and to deal with it somehow.
And the exchange is relegated to yet another Zoom meeting, right?
Yes.
Which, I mean, I find these things completely draining still, and I have a year of experience with this now.
Yeah, I agree.
I totally want to emphasize what you just said, because I feel like there's an expectation from so many sides to just resume with business as usual. I've got a scholarship, actually, and was told, or we were told as people who got promoted by them, that we were expected to, or we are expected to, finish our studies in time. So we don't get a general additional semester or anything added to our time of scholarship. And it's stressing me out quite a bit, to say the very least, because I know that I cannot do that. We need to particularly point out the missed seminars, basically, that I wasn't able to attend, and I need a certificate, basically, by the Prüfungsamt that says, well, this seminar didn't happen, so Ms. Giegel wasn't able to attend it. And I think this is a terrible and very, I think, neoliberalistic view on how we do our work at university or how we study. And of course, the same goes for teachers, right? That you are expected to just teach away within this new situation. And it's something I feel has to do with our mindset towards work in, I guess, Germany, or maybe as a society as a whole. I'm not sure about that. But I feel this is this mindset to just go on, do business as usual. It isn't something very different. You can just work from home. And I've noticed during the summer term that just what you said, that all the routines I've had weren't working anymore. And it was something that stressed me out immensely. And I needed to take days off work because I've overexerted myself on some days, because I thought, well, you've now had your 2 to 3 video conferences and can now do the text for the next 2. And I just sometimes broke down the next day and wasn't able to, well, I was able to get out of bed, but then I went on my couch and didn't get anywhere from there because I was just so exhausted and in crisis mode. But still in my mind, I knew that I was expected to just finish in time. So that's, just to emphasize your point, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's in that case, students and teachers, I think, are not different, at least in this one regard. It's super draining for all of us. And I have these same situations, Sophie, that you just talked about, where you spend your whole day in Zoom, you're totally over Zoomed.
Yeah.
And as you put it, everything has been very screeny, as you said. And the next day, your brain is just on the fritz and you need something else. And I mean, this is difficult for me, but I can't imagine what this is like for students who have to go to classes and then maybe to group meetings, and then they also maybe even work from home, and they spend their whole day in front of their laptop speaking to so many different teachers with so many different demands. I mean, I know what my demands are because I'm always the teacher in my seminars, but for students who are faced with 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different teachers or lecturers, this is always being faced with different demands, different etiquette, and so on and so forth, and sort of micro regulations and administrative things that need to be adhered to. So for students, this is, I think, additionally challenging in the regard of like social navigation, as it were, plus the whole screeniness of the thing.
Just to add to this, I think there's a huge difference between teachers and students in terms of control. I mean, of course, teachers had and probably still have to figure out how they want to teach their classes, but they are in control of the formats that they are choosing. Students just can like say, okay, I need to take these classes. One is like very seminar-like, only that the seminar sessions are held in Zoom. The other is like just completely asynchronous, where you don't talk to your lecturer ever. The third is just a different format, and you have to just make do with all of that, and you're not in control of any of that.
And I feel like in the end, what suffers is actually the education of us students, because we, like you said, we often cannot decide which seminars we go to because we have all these different aspects that demand something from us, whether it's work or a scholarship or just the Regelstudienzeit, right? And so we need to choose these various seminars. And I felt in my summer term, like I already said, that I dropped some seminars actually because I didn't feel able to do this work additionally. And I mostly focused on those seminars in which I felt that I had a good time with, and in which there was this, at least an attempt at this kind of collective knowledge building or knowledge construction, basically. But that's hard to find. And I mean, I don't know about the winter term, whether some things improved, I'm sure. But I could also imagine that it still doesn't feel like we've got any control over what is happening to us. I think that's something I've experienced, especially at the start of summer term, which was that there wasn't any communication towards us students. I was waiting for emails. I've chosen my all my seminars, and I think I've chosen them before the crisis really hit. And so I sat there and for 2 months was basically waiting for a lecturer to tell me, well, yes, we're doing this still or not, and in what kind of format. And I know that, of course, what you just said, Jessica, still stands, that you and Until as well, that you needed to reinvent the teaching or the seminar as well. But you knew, or the lecturers know, there is some progress and there is something going on, while we as students sit there and know nothing. It was such an uncertain time that this term started off to, that was exhausting and also really, really making me anxious. Mm. And in the end, it mostly resolved itself. And I felt like this kind of communication aspect is something that we really need to work on as an institution.
Full stop. Here. Thanks.
So to roll back a little further than that, I just wanted to say that the physical act of leaving my flat and going to university and being in class, that is work too. So not doing that, to just getting up from my bed, walking the 2 meters that is away from my desk, is not going to work for me. And or walking to work for me, and being in class, discussing with people, that's work. And that's something, whenever I came home from that, I felt like I did something. Now I'm just sitting in a Zoom call with 1,000 people, say one word in that whole session, and that's it. Also, I'm not very good at listening to people on a screen. I get very distracted very fast.
People underestimate how hard that is.
Yes.
To keep attention when you're looking at a two-dimensional screen. It's a bit bizarre, really, because we are all experiencing it, and yet there are still people who go it's easy. You're just, particularly grandparents and parents who don't know what this is like. They're sitting there and telling my students when they go, when they're meeting for coffee or something like that, and they say, well, it must be so easy to study right now. No, it isn't.
Because you don't have to go anywhere, right? You're just sitting around at home. How hard can it possibly be?
Yeah.
I mean, it takes all the fun out. Literally all the fun that we have, like discussing, meeting people. You consider like contemporaries, but not friends. Like that you are meeting in front of class and you don't talk to them because it's interesting to talk to them and they have like points that maybe are the contrary to your opinion, but that exchange is great. That it develops you, and that's gone.
Yeah.
I can relate to this so much. These casual encounters is something I am missing so much. I've just talked to a friend about that we miss just hanging out, not being in a video call and feeling the need to talk. Of course, I do love talking with friends or, of course, with fellow students. I'm missing this so much, just this casual encounters where you're like, you know, what we just discussed about was so interesting and your point was great, or something like that, in which you encourage yourself and reinforce this kind of social situation, right?
I think in teaching, we often underestimate the power of the casual after session meetup and what an impact that has on the sort of fossilization of experience and knowledge. Because we know from research in didactics that learning takes time and all of that, and that it has something to do with repetition and with application and all of these processes. But in real life teaching situations, we still oftentimes see lecturers, teachers doing this, I'm going to talk at you and you're going to open your brains to my talking. And once I'm done talking, the knowledge has been transferred to you, which is obviously not what happens. The same doesn't also apply to reading texts, for instance. But it is the talking about it after class with other students that oftentimes leads to these level up moments, these small epiphanies, doing homework together, preparing for presentations together, having this physical exchange of ideas in a physical space, moving around paper together, because learning is also haptic in a sense. It has something kinesthetic to it. And not being able to tick all of these different boxes makes learning and intellectual academic growth so much harder right now. So when students tell me they miss the casual meetup after class, like just going for a coffee or something like that, I have to take this very, very seriously for exactly these reasons. Because meeting up for coffee, talking after class is not just, hi, how are you doing? It's oftentimes also intricately linked to the success that students have when it comes to learning experiences.
Mm.
I've also heard this from other students, that just the 15 minutes before classes, where they go to the classroom, they sit in class, they sit together in the same place or with new people or with the same people, they have banter, they look through the class notes, the teacher comes in. All this is part of the social activity of studying and getting ready for learning in a social setting. And a Zoom call is being switched on the minute before and everyone's muted, nothing's happening, everyone's videos is shut off, and then the teacher comes in and this starts. This is so different and leaves barely any breath to get used to the situation or to get ready for the class, and then you're thrown into it and you stare at these little tiles, and this is really difficult to get comfortable in the setting. And I as a teacher find this extremely hard too. There's so many embodiment in my teaching that I only notice missing now. I mean, the very simple fact that I can't move around, that I can't sort of walk through the classroom, which in the kinds of classrooms that unfortunately we have at university is still a privilege of me as a teacher, but I love that. I like that.
I feel you so much.
Yeah, I pride myself on my Tafelbilder, right? On the work that I do on the blackboard. consolidating information, cross-referencing thoughts, keeping track of ideas. And students find this helpful too. In a Zoom session, I cannot do this. This is just physically impossible. Even if I just have slides or I scribble something on the screen, I can't see the seminar anymore. If I share my screen on Zoom, I see three tiles and none of the others. And to me, this is physically painful and demotivating. And of course, I can find ways of me mitigating some of the damage that it does to the quality of my teaching. For example, I make it a habit of starting or coming to class 15 minutes early and trying to engage in a little light talk and ask students whether they're already there and what they are experiencing right now. But then again, sometimes there is just 100 black screens and nobody responds. And I don't have trouble with that because this can happen to you in a lecture hall. But in a lecture hall, you still see the people and they look at you and they smile or they take some last minute notes or talk among themselves. And I find that lacking and missing in the teaching that I do now.
And I mean, just to give an example of how important this is, the physical space, the social conditions of teaching. When I think of, I think the best seminar sessions that I've had were those where I came into the classroom and people were talking. Students were there, they were engaged with one another. And sometimes it was even hard to start off the proper session because they were already talking to one another, not necessarily about the topic. That's not what I expect. It might be something completely different, but that there is an aliveness of people, of social interaction, that makes such a huge difference to the learning and the teaching that goes on. And that's just something that's not possible in Zoom.
Yeah,
I totally agree with you. And I wanted to add that I think this is something about the context of how we learn and how we frame our learning and teaching. Because we all, of course, have unique styles of teaching and or learning. And in any way, it is not only staring at a screen. As regardless of whatever learning or teaching type you are, it is never only recording something or reading something on a screen. And it always has some kind of a social component, basically. And the pandemic and the crisis have pulled this out of every aspect of our life. That is how I feel, of course, only. And apart from work, maybe. And this is something that I feel that everyone struggles with at this point. During summertime, I had some friends who were like, "Well, this isn't so bad. I don't really miss anything." But since October, I don't know anyone who says, "Well, this is fine. I don't miss something." And this, I think this has to do with the contextualization of knowledge and the contextualization of learning and teaching. That is because learner settings and stuff, you know, we don't need to use these terms, but it is some way of thinking about how we teach and how we learn that can, I think, help us to actually frame or create also digital settings that kind of enable that. Because something I've noticed is, I think I've mentioned it beforehand, that those seminar video call sessions, they can be really, well, I can feel afterwards like I've done something, but they were very meticulously set in a way of group discussions and a mix of methods, basically, that enables that. But I felt there was a lot of deliberation that went into that planning. And this is something that is also highly exhausting, I think.
I'm basically every day walking around somewhere in the hall where all of you have your offices. And there's usually life. Like, people are there, open doors. You can just greet people. You're just walking by. And just like a week ago, I walked there and I had tears in my eyes because it was dead. There was no one there. It was empty. And that's what university in general at the moment is. I mean, I friggin' hate the main hall, usually in summer and winter semesters when there are a million people in there. But I miss hating that.
Yeah.
I miss loving being alone in that main hall, like sometime in the evening at 10 o'clock or something. I miss being able to love that.
Thanks for listening. Unconditional Teaching is a project by Katharina Pietsch, Tilsi Bura, and myself, Jessica Koch. Music by Lily Olason. If you want to know more about our project, head over to unconditional-teaching.com. Do you like our content and would like to engage with us? Check out our comment sections or contact us via team@unconditional-teaching.com.